Hello and welcome to episode 16 of this season's Barmy Article 15 Minutes of Fanzine. Now, I'm cheating a little bit this week. I'm going to make up for the last two missed weeks by giving you an extended version. Whether that's a good thing is your decision. But this is pre-recorded from back in November when I interviewed Aoife Mannion at Old Trafford for the fanzine that went out in issue 12, which there's still a few copies available. If you check the link in the description, it's also going to be featured in clips on an upcoming One Love episode on MUTV, which is about fanzines. So that'll include mine and Barney's Red News, which has been around since 1987, I think, and Andy Mitten's United We Stand, which are both fanzines for the men's team. So look out for that. I think it's due around March time. The premiere of season 2 is on tonight, and that's about Rainbow Devils. There's a new Substack post out today which gives from the archives the article we did on Rainbow Devils in March 2022 in the fanzine, so I'll look out for that on the Substack. And if you'll forgive the extended play of this episode, I'm going to leave you with me and Aoife Mannion from back in November.
Hello, hello. Hey. Hi, are you okay?
I'm Andy.
Good to see you. Hi, Andy.
Thanks for your time.
That's okay.
Before we start, are you familiar with the work of Stanley Chow?
Is he an artist?
Yeah.
Would I have listened to him on a podcast?
I don't know if he's been on a podcast, but he does a lot of artwork which you'd probably recognise. So for the front cover of the fanzine that this is going to be in.
Oh, nice.
He's done you.
Tell you what, he's enhanced me there.
So that's what the front cover's going to look like for this issue.
Oh, nice. That's cool. That's really cool.
So I'll make sure a copy finds its way to you.
Yeah. I think that's the best I've ever looked.
Are you aware of the fanzine?
Yeah, I have heard of it. Yeah. I've not been super looking at it or anything, but I have definitely heard of it.
Well, there's some copies there for you to take.
Cool, thank you.
And
thank you very much.
Highlighted a particular article in that one from a pre-2005 United player.
Yeah. I'm going to read this actually. Not now, I've not got time, but that's cool. That's really cool. Okay, cool. Some bedtime reading tonight.
Yeah, and there's my own little redhead, that was Sophie at Old Trafford on the front of that one.
Have I ever met her? Would I ever seen
She's been shy it? Up to now. It's only okay. Very recently she's decided she wants autographs.
How so old is she?
She's 8 now.
Okay, so she's getting to that point where
we got Jade and Maya at the weekend.
Oh, she's got a strong start then.
So
okay, cool.
It'll be autograph hunting now, but she wants to be in person for a while.
Yeah, okay.
So I said, do you want me to try and get you one today? She said, no, I want to be here.
Yeah, I will send her a little video if she'd like that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, cool.
Right, even as a 40-year-old, I remember back when I was 10, Eric Cantona giving me a thumbs up and a wink after Mark Hughes' testimonial. Do you remember any interactions with footballers as a kid, either through playing or as a fan, that have stuck with you?
I definitely would have remembered if Eric Cantona winked at me. I can't say that I've winked at anyone, but there's definitely over the years been some fans, like usually they're like little girls that parents have taken to the game, and the parents will say, oh, you know, my daughter's really shy, and then over the games you're able to develop a bit of a sort of a friendship and like wave in, check in, say hello. And a few years ago when the game was much smaller, you could really spend, you know, a little bit more time. I remember one girl in particular, like we managed to get her on the pitch after the games and she could walk around. Obviously we can't do that anymore, and it baffles me that she's now like university age. I sort of follow her on Instagram and I occasionally speak to her dad as well on Twitter. So yeah, a few people I do think that. Did you mean more as me as a as
both,
a
both sides, like both a, sides when you were a kid? Do you remember anything that
I don't remember like actual interactions as much like after the games and stuff, but I remember how it felt to watch in the stands and how overwhelming that was. And I remember Robbie Savage at Blues in particular, right. Really, like, really random one. I loved him. I thought he was great. I thought he was really good.
So on the subject of Cantona, you've obviously paid tribute to yourself with the pop collar.
Yeah.
I've recently been watching him in concert, playing his own original music. What might your creative endeavours be? Might you come out with an album at some point?
No, there's definitely not going to be any albums from me. I don't think anyone would want to listen to them, to be honest. I think him putting out his own album and really leaning into that side of his personality just shows how, like, authentic he is and individual he is as a person. Obviously, last year we had the collars on our shirts, and at the time I didn't know exactly that, you know, I was necessarily inspired or doing that for a particular reason. Like, as a kid, I'd always pop my collar whenever we had shirts with collars on. And then people had obviously brought it to my mind, like, oh yeah, Cantona did that. He's obviously an incredible, incredible player and person. In terms of stuff that I do outside, like, nothing as exciting as that. What would I maybe do a bit more of? I don't want to say books. I think people might fall asleep, but definitely not songs as such. But there are some bits that I like doing, like cooking, going to concerts, hanging out with friends, so...
So, you mentioned already watching Birmingham City as a kid.
Yeah.
What do you remember from fan culture at that time? And what do you like about fan culture in the women's game now?
Yeah. I remember a lot about fan culture. It's amazing what you absorb when you're, I don't know, 6 years, 7 years, 8 years old. I remember the songs, I remember the chants. That's where I learned all my swear words. So, I don't know how much of what I learned could be repeated on camera. But I absolutely loved it. I was in awe. It was the only place where you'd experience that feeling of, I don't know, what it would have been, maybe 20,000 people all sort of like singing in harmony. It was surreal, really. So I definitely remember that. And in terms of the women's game, it's obviously started off being fewer fans, and it's grown so much in the last few years. So it's becoming more and more of a massive audience in the way that looks a bit similar to what I would have remembered growing up. And then also the types of people going to football games, in particular the women's game, it's a little bit different now. So slightly more family orientated, lots of girls, which was never a thing when I was going to St Andrews at Blues, for example. It was all boys, it was all men. And it didn't really bother me as such at the time, but now when I look back, I think it's really cool when you see, like, lots of different types of people going, and that's something that's quite cool about the women's game as well.
And as we see on the front cover, my little girl.
Now
a regular season ticket holder.
Yeah, she's done well for herself, and she's got a good team as well.
Good role models too.
Yeah. Do you mean the boys or do you mean us?
Oh, no, she couldn't name a male player.
I think that's really cool, actually, that, you know, when I would have been her age, I don't know if I would have been able to tell you one female footballer. She's a little bit sad, actually. We had Karen Carney go to our same primary school and secondary school, and she was a trailblazer in the women's game, and she's since gone on to be an incredible pundit at the moment, one of the first ones to, like, break into Sky Sports and stuff like that. But I wouldn't have known who she was necessarily at your daughter's age, so it's cool that she can, like, lean into that.
It's great for me to be able to get her into these games easily and affordably and seeing such positive football as well.
Yeah, is she going to come to Old Trafford?
Yeah, it'll be her third time at Old Trafford, I think.
Nice, not too shabby.
Now, you've been to two FA Cup finals, both under Mark Skinner.
Yeah.
What differences in approach did you notice between with Birmingham and then last season with United?
So, at Birmingham I would have been a lot younger, maybe. I think that was 2017. So that would have been six years ago-ish, I think. Does that sound about right? 6 years ago. And the experience of Wembley was so overwhelming. That stadium attendance was a record, maybe, at the time for FA Cup finals. And I think it was around 39,000, somewhere in and around that. And really the attendances now in finals at Old Trafford just blow the doors off that. So I remember being really overwhelmed by how many fans there were. Thankfully, we're at a place now where that, you know, we're used to it a bit more. It doesn't faze us as much. And also at Birmingham, that was my experience. A few years before me, they'd actually got to the FA Cup final and won, but that wasn't at Wembley. I remember feeling very much like the underdog. So City were very established, and they'd won it, I think, maybe either previous to that, or, you know, they'd been winning the League Cups and they were doing really well in the league. So there was a real underdog mentality. And even though United as a team in the women's is quite it's quite recent, I think we were created in 2018, we don't have that sense, that same sense of maybe underdog, even though the FA Cup final was our first FA Cup final. There was a sense of really believing that we could win, and that was what was exciting us.
We believed it too.
Yeah, and I believe it will come. It will come at some point. So I don't know if that's answered your question in a long-winded
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I think so. It's the step up in confidence.
Yeah,
we're not underdogs to anybody.
Yeah,
which I think is important.
Yeah, we continue to have, and we had at that point as well, some players who were big names in their own right. Big national team players, and when we got to the FA Cup final with Birmingham, there wasn't as much of that. I think we had Ellen White, but I can't, maybe Jess Carter is another well-known name in the league, and Katrin as well at Chelsea, but our United team that stepped out for that FA Cup final was, you know, some really, really good names on that, so there was a lot of individuals probably backing themselves as well. Very exciting. It was a shame. The result was a shame.
First time, you've got to. Yeah. Sometimes say you've got to lose one to win one.
Yeah.
Next time. Now, after featuring heavily for Birmingham, you were an ever-present before Mark Skinner arrived and under him. You declined the new contract in 2019. Was that a personal decision because of ambition? Had you spoke to other clubs? Did you want to step out from playing for the underdog and set your sights higher?
I continue to be, and definitely at that point as well, I was so ambitious, and I loved Birmingham, and I look back on my time so fondly there, and we always hit well above our weight, and under Mark Skinner we'd done so well there. My favourite time at Birmingham was the time under him in particular. I'd been there for 6 years. I think Mark ended up doing about 2.5 years at Birmingham. And I think by the end of that, I was ready to really try and take a step up in terms of the caliber of expectation and performance and players. I wanted to be around players that were full of, like, the most hungry players, the most ambitious players, players that were dedicating their absolute life to it, that were like superstars on an international front. And that was what I ended up getting, like, kind of being exposed to that. And like I say, those girls at Birmingham hit well above their weight, and really, really good personalities and really good people. And it was probably a level of ambition that drove an appetite to kind of get out. And also at that time, I'd never really been out of, well, I hadn't been out of Birmingham, Solihull. So there was that as well.
And according to the records I could find, you signed for United 3 days before Mark Skinner was officially announced. Was he involved in the recruitment process?
Mm.
Had you spoke to him beforehand, before signing? Was he a factor in coming to United?
He actually, I did not know at all that he was going to end up, that he was going to end up being the manager. And I don't think it actually crossed at all. And I didn't know that there was about 3 days.
It's according to Wikipedia, so it might not be completely accurate.
Yeah. To be fair, it could be. And, like, the deals are done sometimes before the pictures actually go out, you know. So there would have been a little bit of that. But I didn't know. I didn't know that Mark was going to be leading the team. And I remember when we maybe heard a few days before that was going to be, there were the rumours that he might sign. And I remember texting him saying, like, really, really excited for you to come and be involved. And it, that level of familiarity of having worked under a manager before, and like my perception was I'd really enjoyed it, and we'd done really well as a team, and individually I felt like I'd thrived under him before, so I was really excited for that. But it wasn't actually a thing.
So you made the decision with no manager in place at the time?
Correct. I didn't know who the manager was going to be.
So it's all about the badge.
Yes.
The badge and the ambition.
Yeah, to be fair, you know, United is in a luxurious position in that players don't need to necessarily rely on who the manager is going to be for it to be an exciting place to be. And that's not a bad thing when a manager is really known for being like really exciting and people want to sign, maybe especially for that. But United can transcend that. And then most of the times you get happy both. So I ended up signing under a manager that I was really excited to play under again. And also it was United, so I was really lucky in that sense.
Now, you were on the cusp of an overdue England call-up when you got an injury. What more recently led to you making the decision to play for Ireland, and what was the main motivation behind that?
Yeah, so I think I'd been on a couple of England camps, but I didn't have a cap. So I'd been in a couple of squads, but I didn't have a cap when I had a long-term ACL injury. And over the time that followed that, at some point I thought that I wanted to look forward to doing something that might be a bit different, a little bit exciting. And I remember reaching out to the captain of the Ireland team, Kate McCabe, asking her about it. And then shortly after that, within days, I ended up getting injured again. So that sort of ended up delaying the process. And I didn't necessarily think five years ago that was necessarily something that I was going to end up doing. And as time went on, it was just something that I found that just really, really found exciting. And all of my family are Irish. My parents moved over to England for work from Ireland about 30 years ago, and they've lived here ever since. But all of our extended family live in Ireland. And so it was similar actually to when I signed at United, in that all of my family are, you know, my dad is a Blues fan because we lived in the area. But really it's United. Like, there's a lot of United fans in Ireland. So when I signed for United, something that I didn't expect was how much people were going to be excited about that in particular. And that was the same actually when I went on a camp at Ireland, that it just, my family are happy and excited for me to do whatever I find interesting and wherever it takes me. But that in particular was like a new level of kind of just connection, I think. So for them, it's like they get their absolute like best things, like a connection to United and also Ireland. I know all of my younger cousins, you know, they've been coming to the games and they watch it, and they actually follow the Irish women's national team as fans, regardless of whether I'm there or not. So that's been really nice, and it's really resonated in a way that I didn't necessarily know it was.
And finally, you've had a taste of Champions League football, both with Birmingham and with City, even scoring a goal in the Champions League.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about your experiences of Champions League football and what it means to you to get back to that level with United?
Yeah, so Champions League football is like just a massive step up from the domestic league, and it's really unpredictable, the different styles that teams play. Even though each team in the WSL play slightly differently, actually when you move into the Champions League, you realise that actually in the WSL it's all variations on a theme. And so different styles of play is something that's really exciting and really unpredictable. And believe it or not, with Birmingham, I actually managed to get to play in a Champions League semi-final, I think back in, I want to say, 2014. That Birmingham team really did hit so far above its weight. And so to be able to get close to that and hopefully do that with United is really what, you know, that's what everyone wants. It feels like a validation of what we're doing in the league. A top three team you have to be to get into the Champions League. We managed to get that last year. And then obviously we lost to PSG, so we didn't get out of the sort of qualifying stages to get into the group. So that was so, so disappointing. So we managed to take a step forward, but another step forward is required to be taken to get into the group stage. I think the group format is a relatively recent thing. Don't think there was a group format when I played in it before. So that's where we've set our eyes. You know, obviously it's step by step, day by day, like week game by week game. But that's the next thing, I think, to really break in to Europe in a way that, you know, the fans sort of demand of us, expect us. So, yeah.
The goal that you scored was a penalty.
Yes.
If we get a penalty in the Champions League next season, will you fight Katie for it?
I think there's a... Fighting Katie for a penalty and getting the penalty are two very different things. What's important with penalties is that the person that takes them has confidence and has an expectation that they're going to score. And typically that's been Katie. She's happy to take them. And so if she didn't feel like she could take them, then I would be very happy to take them as well. I was the penalty taker at Birmingham and would always bat myself in a penalty situation. I think they're a fascinating part of football, and some of the best players I know really wouldn't want to take a penalty ever. So I don't think that they correlate to skill necessarily. A bit more to sort of psych, maybe a bit more taps into the psych side. And there's nothing like standing in front of a penalty, ready to take it with such high expectation of what you need to do. I imagine that's what, like, Formula One drivers feel, where it all rests on one particular thing. So it's just, I guess it's a bit of a thrill, but really, really a bit, can be a bit overwhelming, a bit scary as well. So, yes, I would always be willing to take them, but happy to do that in the right way.
Great. That's everything.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time and your insight.
Yeah, thanks.
And January... The fanzine will be out, which has this in.
Lovely.
So I will find you at the end of the game.
Lovely.
Pass one over.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Do you want me to take a quick video for your daughter?
Yeah, that'd be great.
What's she called? Sophie.
Sophie.
Oh, keep it on, yeah.
Face it down,
Thanks. Yeah. Hi Sophie, I'm just sat at Old Trafford across from your dad. He's showed me a Barmy article with your face on the front cover at a United game at Old Trafford, and he's been telling me how much you've been enjoying coming to watch us, so I really wanted to send you a video to say hello, and I hope that I see you at a future game. There you go.
Thanks very much.
Right.
She will love that.
Yeah, no problem. Right, see you later. Thank you. Oh, thanks for your time.
Don't forget these.
Oh yeah. Thank you. Cheers. I'll read that article when I get home.